Welcome to the Scientist Podcast, where we bring you the research community like you've never heard it before. Today on episode 14, we'll be talking to Nick Underwood, an aerospace engineer and NOAA hurricane hunter, who will be explaining what hurricane hunting is and what it's like to fly through a hurricane. As an aspiring astronaut, he will also explain how he plans to achieve this lifetime goal of his. If you enjoy this podcast and want to hear more from us, you can head to www.scientist.net/pages/podcast or search the Scientist Podcast on all major podcast apps. Hi everyone and welcome back to the Scientist Podcast. Today we'll be talking to Nick, an aerospace engineer and hurricane hunter. Would you like to introduce yourself and explain what it is that you do?
Sure. So my name's Nick Underwood and I am an aerospace engineer for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Aircraft Operations Center, which most people know as the NOAA Hurricane Hunters. So part of my job is actually being an aerospace engineer, getting new science instruments mounted on our fleet of aircraft, making sure everything's, you know, working properly. And then the other half of my job is serving on air crew for mission flights into hurricanes and in the Arctic and on marine mammal surveys. And so it's really a nice mixed bag of exciting things I get to do at my job.
And when you're actually up in the plane, what sort of things do you actually like get up to? Are you making sure everything's going right or do you actually physically collect the data?
So my job on at least on hurricane flights is to sit in the back of the aircraft and deploy what are called dropsondes, which are pretty much weather balloons in reverse. And so we launch these out of the bottom of the aircraft. They have a little parachute that deploys. And as they're falling down, they're collecting temperature, pressure, humidity, wind velocity, sending all of that data back to the aircraft in real time, where I'm doing quality control, making sure the instrument's collecting what it needs to be. And then once that splashes in the ocean, we send that data off to the National Hurricane Center so that they can incorporate it into their forecast models of where the storm is going to go and how strong it's going to be when it gets there.
So is that the data you're collecting? It's sort of forecasting hurricanes?
Yes. And so, you know, these aircraft that we fly on are pretty much flying research laboratories. So they've got all different kinds of science instruments all over. And we're launching the dropsondes as well. And the National Hurricane Center actively uses that data to get a better picture of the storm and really try to figure out what it's going to do.
And you say you're a hurricane hunter and you were mentioning there's sort of like another aspect of your work. Is it sort of 50-50 or is it just completely dependent on the season?
It's really dependent on the season. And, you know, we do have off-season projects that we support as well. So things like chasing North Atlantic cold fronts in the wintertime. We do a project out in Kansas where we chase tornadoes. So really there's always plenty that we're doing and supporting. And as far as being in the office versus being on the aircraft, I'd say it's about 60% in the office, 40% out in the field doing this kind of work. So, and I'm plenty happy with that split.
Mm. And what was it that initially got you interested in hurricanes and hurricane hunting and stuff like that?
So I've been at this job for about 4 years now, and 4.5 years ago, I didn't know that it existed. So I was working as an aerospace engineer for the United States Navy and really wanted to go do something more science focused. And so I was searching for jobs and saw that NOAA had an aerospace engineering position open. And I just thought, oh, I'll go be an aerospace engineer for them. I didn't really know at the time that it was going to be also flying into hurricanes, mm-hmm. but it's sort of been a beautiful thing to stumble into.
So what was the difference? So in your old job, there was no flying or anything?
There's really no field work. And a lot of that job was sort of sitting in a dark room for 8 hours a day and looking at strip charts, mm-hmm. which, you know, if you're into that, that's great. But for me, I like having a window.
And how did you get into it, sort of like your sort of education background?
Right. So I was born and raised in West Virginia. And in eighth grade, my parents and I took a family vacation down to Cape Canaveral, Florida. And I saw my first rocket launch. And I remember just staring at it wide-eyed and thinking, well, I want to do that. And so then I went to West Virginia University, got my bachelor's degree in aerospace engineering. And then my first job out of college was that job for Naval Air Systems Command as a flight test engineer. And, you know, as I said, shifted over to NOAA. And I, at the same time I was offered the NOAA position, I was offered a NASA position. And so I had to, on the spot, had to pick between the two.
Typical choice, a man in demand, yeah, really.
Exactly, yeah. or just, you know, some really dumb luck. But I, my long-term goal is to be an astronaut. And the advice that I got from an astronaut was, don't sit behind a desk. And so both of those jobs, the NOAA job and the NASA job, have desks. But I figured that the NOAA job, the desk at least part of the time was going to be in a hurricane, which I figured counted for something.
And what, where do you see sort of your career as an astronaut sort of progressing in the future?
Well, so I'm not going to make it this round, which that's fine. Totally didn't expect to. But by the next hiring round, I'll have my master's degree. I'll have a few more years of experience under my belt as a hurricane hunter. And, I think that'll at least make me a little more competitive than some other folks.
What's the process of sort of becoming an astronaut?
Really, it's an online application. Mm-hmm. And you have to be a United States citizen. You have to have a master's degree. They updated. It used to just be a bachelor's degree, but now it's a master's degree.
And did you say you're doing that master's now?
I am working on it, yes. I'm getting a master's in physical oceanography from the University of South Florida, which is, you know, right local to where I live now.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is you have to, as part of the interview process, there's a physical fitness test. So really you just have to, if you meet those three check boxes, you can be an astronaut.
Do you have to do quite a lot of training? So once you get in, so with this, with that application process, do you then, is there then a lot more sort of places where they like shed people off sort of thing?
Yeah, so there's a, so there's a rigorous interview process, and then they inevitably select usually like 12 to 15 people. And then at that point, you're an astronaut candidate and you go through about 2 years of astronaut training. And then once you're outside of that, then you're, you know, ready to be a full-fledged astronaut and you're able to be selected for missions and that kind of stuff. But that's still a long, long way off. I've still got to get my foot in the door at least.
Right. It sounds amazing though. I'm very jealous.
It's a, it's really been a lifelong goal at this point. And I think that if hurricane hunting, you know, as incredible as it is, ends up just being a stepping stone, then that is an excellent stepping stone.
Yeah, definitely. So with hurricane hunting, when you're in the plane, this might sound like a really silly question, but do you physically fly through a full-on hurricane?
So we have two types of aircraft that we use. One is a Gulfstream 4. So it's a business jet that's been modified to fly this hurricane surveillance mission. Mm-hmm. And so that aircraft will fly at 45,000 feet above, around, and in front of the storms. And then the other aircraft we use is a WP-3D Orion, and those actually fly straight through the storm. So through the eye wall, through all the storm clouds, usually, you know, 8 to 10,000 feet above the water.
And what's that like, driving through a hurricane?
It's you know, like I said, I just sit in the back on these aircraft, but it's kind of like being on a wooden roller coaster. But also if you've taken your car through like an automatic car wash, mm-hmm. and you know, all the water and everything is just kind of getting slapped against the windows as you're going through, it's kind of like that, but with the vibration and the bouncing around of a wooden roller coaster.
Is it quite dangerous, or do you ever get sort of scared at any points?
I certainly, on my first flight through a hurricane into Hurricane Matthew in 2016, you know, everyone on the crew, I was just kind of observing, and everyone on the crew has done this for years, and they were all calm, cool, collected, you know, which I am at this point. But on my first flight, probably about halfway through, I was thinking, was this a good idea? Do I want to do this? And there is some risk involved, because, you know, it is, you are flying an aircraft into a hurricane. But we certainly take every precaution and measure that we can to mitigate those risks. So, you know, anyone who gets on that aircraft is briefed on what we're doing, why we're doing it, the any safety information that they need to know. We drill constantly emergency procedures. And so we do everything we can to make it as safe as possible.
Mm-hmm. And have you been sort of in any recent hurricanes?
Most recently I flew Hurricane Laura. And so our crew deployed to St. Croix to start flying that system when it was still Tropical Depression 13, and became Tropical Storm Laura while we were still in St. Croix. And then, you know, we flew a series of missions and pretty much flew that storm every day until it made landfall in Louisiana. And so our crew was flying missions, you know, once every day. And then at the same time, we have a second crew who was flying missions at a 12-hour offset from us. So pretty much the National Hurricane Center is getting a constant stream of data from us going out and flying these storms.
And are you finding that there's sort of like a increased incidence of these hurricanes sort of like as time's going on, with sort of like the way the climate's changing and stuff, or have you not really seen that firsthand?
I mean, at least in the years that I've been here, we've certainly had some very active hurricane seasons. 2017 with Harvey and Irma and Maria was, you know, a pretty crazy season. And this season with Paulette and Renee, I think is the pronunciation, forming just yesterday. They're like 11 days ahead of schedule as far as the earliest, you know, P and R storms. Mm-hmm. And so I know that there's ongoing research into whether climate change is affecting hurricane intensity and frequency. Certainly we've seen a lot of instances of rapid intensification over the last few years of storms just being really small and then blowing up to be really massive and powerful storms very quickly. And those warm sea surface temperatures fuel that process. So I'll let the scientists speak to it officially, but from my perspective, I would say that, you know, we are seeing at least stronger storms, and, you know, 2020 is breaking records so far as frequency goes. So,
and you just mentioned about the water, sort of water temperatures and things like that. Mm-hmm. What, and you mentioned earlier, is it you can only fly into hurricanes above water, not above land?
So the main reason that we fly these storms over water is that if a storm system is over land, there are radars on the ground, there are folks who can go and launch weather balloons, and we've got all these ways of collecting data in place. But when these storms are out over the ocean, there's nothing there. And so these planes sort of serve as an opportunity to get those types of equipment, radars, drop zones, you know, all these other instruments out to the storm to collect that data when we normally wouldn't have that opportunity otherwise. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, once a storm really makes landfall, you know, the prediction of it is done. And that's what our role is with these aircraft.
Mm-hmm. I've seen sort of pictures of sort of the eye of hurricanes, and mm-hmm. it's just not what you'd think it would look like, is it? I didn't, it's sort of like tropical skies in the middle, isn't it?
Yeah. So when the storms get pretty powerful, usually if it's a major hurricane, so category 3 and above, the eye really starts to clear out, at least, you know, from the low level scud still kind of lingers, but the cloud tops really start to clear out, and you will get your blue skies above you in the eye, you know, when these storms are more powerful. And we call that the stadium effect, because where we're flying through at a lower altitude, once you get into the eye, these cloud tops are towering above you to 30, 40, 50,000 feet. And it looks like you're on the field of a football stadium, mm-hmm. You know, with the stands and everything up around
yeah.
you.
Wow. So when you're not in the sky, mm-hmm. what's the actual work that you do? Sort of, you were mentioning it's 60% like mm-hmm. desk based. What actually is that you're doing?
So we have 9 aircraft in total, 2 P3s, a Gulfstream 4, 4 Twin Otters, which are just little twin engine propeller planes. We've got all of these scientific research aircraft that we use to support missions all across the United States and all across the world, really. Any scientist that comes to us and has an atmospheric research project or an oceanographic research project that we can help them with, we, you know, try to fit that into our schedule. And so we do have a lot of different folks from around the world come to us with different science instruments that they want to put on these aircraft. And so my desk job is to do the engineering and do the analysis to get these science instruments mounted securely and safely on the aircraft so that, you know, the scientists can actually go fly the mission that they want to. So it's a lot of physics, it's a lot of structural mechanics, it's a lot of aerodynamics, thermodynamics, pretty much, you know, every topic that I covered in my engineering curriculum in school, I get to use that stuff, which is pretty nice.
It keeps you busy.
Yeah, it really does. And there's certainly no shortage of work.
No. And sort of just to get to know you outside of your work, we've a question that we like to ask all our guests. And that's just what's your favorite book? What sort of your book recommendation to everyone listening?
So is this fiction or nonfiction?
It can be anything you like, whatever you're into.
Well, as far as nonfiction goes, I would say that my favorite book is This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate, which is by Naomi Klein. I think it came out in 2015. And that book really, really talks about climate change and different methods that we as a species can take to address it. And I was reading this book while I was in Alaska for my first time, supporting a mission that we do up there that's climate focused. And it's a book that is excellent and very well researched, but it is so infuriating to read that I could only read like 10 pages at a time before I just get angry and have to put it down and go cool off and come back to it. But it really is, incredibly well researched, and it's a great read if you're looking to really learn about climate change and different methods that we are trying to take right now to address it. And if we're going to talk nonfiction, or if we're going to talk fiction books, then the Fellowship of the Ring is just, I read that as a kid and I still love the Lord of the Rings, and it's my favorite series, and big Tolkien fan.
Yeah, well, a couple of great recommendations.
Yeah.
I think that's all we've got time for today, but thank you so much for coming on. It's been really, I found it really, really interesting learning about hurricane hunting, something I never thought, I never knew it actually existed.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Scientist Podcast. To catch up on more episodes, find the Scientist Podcast on Spotify or visit www.scientist.net.